This is a true story which happened with one of our Broccoli Fam subscriber on her vacation a few years ago. She and her friend decided to stay in a hostel, and things didn't go down well. The names have been changed for personal reasons.
I had always heard stories about the unexpected chaos that came with staying in hostels, but nothing could have prepared me for what happened during my trip to the sleepy town of Tenghua. A place known for its ancient caves and serene beauty, Tenghua seemed like the perfect spot to slow down for a bit. I had checked into Driftwood Lodge, which was running a promotion. Stay 3 nights and get the fourth free. Who would say no to that? I took the overnight train into town while my travel companion, Claire, opted for the bus. This meant we arrived at different times and consequently got placed in separate rooms. Driftwood Lodge's dorms were small, four-person setups with squeaky bunk beds and a single dim light bulb hanging from the ceiling. My room seemed fine, just three other guys who were quiet and kept to themselves. Claire wasn't so lucky. The first evening, we met up at the hostel's communal area for drinks. Claire seemed uneasy, shifting in her seat and glancing over her shoulder. When I asked her what was wrong, she hesitated before saying, "It's nothing, really, just my roommates are a little much." "What do you mean?" I pressed. "They're loud and drunk, like really drunk." She shrugged it off, but her forced smile told me there was more to the story. We decided to call it an early night, since we had plans to visit the caves the next day. As we walked back to our separate rooms, Claire's expression darkened. "I'll be fine," she muttered, almost to herself. The next morning, Claire wasn't at breakfast. After waiting for over an hour, I went to her room to check on her. She opened the door a crack, her face pale and her eyes bloodshot. "What happened?" I asked, stepping inside. Her voice was barely a whisper. "One of the guys tried to get in my bed last night." "What? Are you okay? Did you tell someone?" My mind was racing. "Yeah. I switched rooms after it happened. But he was persistent." She shuddered. "He kept saying he just wanted to cuddle. It was disgusting." I insisted we report it to the staff, but Claire waved me off. "I'm fine now. I just want to forget about it," she said. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. That night, Claire seemed determined to make the most of her stay. We joined a group heading to a local pub, hoping to drown our unease in cheap beer and loud music. But even amidst the laughter and clinking glasses, Claire's eyes kept darting to the shadows, as if expecting someone to emerge. We returned to the hostel late, the chill of the night air doing little to sober us up. Claire had switched to a new room, but when we reached her door, she hesitated. "Do you mind hanging out for a bit? Just until I fall asleep?" "Of course," I said, pulling up a chair as she climbed into bed. The room was empty, except for us, and I tried to reassure her. "It's just a bad coincidence. The new room will be better." She nodded, but didn't say anything. Within minutes, she was asleep, her breathing soft and steady. I left quietly, making sure the door was locked behind me. The next morning, Claire didn't show up for breakfast again. This time, her door was ajar when I went to check on her. My stomach churned as I stepped inside. Her bed was empty, the sheets rumpled and damp with sweat. Her belongings were scattered across the floor, but there was no sign of Claire. Well, my first thought was that she had left early for a walk, but something about the room felt wrong. The air was heavy, almost suffocating, and the light bulb flickered weakly. I went to the reception desk to ask if anyone had seen her. The staff member on duty, a young guy with dark circles under his eyes, frowned. "I don't remember her leaving this morning," he said. "But maybe she went with one of the tour groups." That didn't sit right with me. Claire wasn't the type to leave without her stuff. I decided to check the nearby cafes and shops, asking anyone I could find if they had seen her. nobody had. By the time the evening rolled around, panic was setting in. I returned to the hostel and went straight to the staff again. This time, the manager got involved. "We'll check the security cameras." The footage was grainy, but it showed Claire entering her room the night before. No one else went in or out until the early hours of the morning, when the screen suddenly filled with static. When the feed resumed, Claire's door was open, but the hallway was empty. "Maybe she's playing a prank, or..." The manager's voice trailed off. "She wouldn't do that," I snapped. "Something's happened to her." The manager, shaken, called the police. They arrived quickly, two officers with tired eyes and a general air of disinterest. They listened to my story, their expressions remaining unchanged. "Look, kid," one of them said, "these things happen. Maybe she got carried away, had a bit too much to drink, and decided to go for a walk. Happens all the time." "But she wouldn't leave without her phone, her wallet," I argued, frustration bubbling up. "Maybe she met someone, got swept off her feet," the other officer shrugged. "Young people, you know how they are." Their dismissive attitude fueled my anger. I demanded to see Claire's roommate from the first night, the one she had complained about. The manager hesitated, but eventually relented, leading me to a small room at the back of the hostel. The man looked up from his book, startled. He had a shifty look in his eyes and a bruise blooming on his cheek. "What do you want?" he demanded. "I want to know where Claire is," I said, my voice trembling with rage. He scoffed. "I don't know anything. She was acting crazy, that's all." I didn't believe him. I lunged at him, but he was quicker than he looked. He grabbed my wrist, his grip surprisingly strong. The next thing I knew, I was pinned to the wall. He spanked me hard, once, twice, three times. I screamed, writhing in pain and fear. He laughed, a cruel, guttural sound. "See? You like that, don't you?" I managed to break free, scrambling away from him, my eyes wide with terror. I fled the hostel, my mind racing. I had to find Claire. I spent the next few hours searching frantically, checking every hotel, every guest house in town. Finally, I found her at a small family-run hotel on the outskirts. She was hiding in a corner of the lobby, her face pale and drawn, her eyes filled with a mixture of fear and shame. We rushed back to the police station, Claire trembling as she recounted the events of the previous night. The officers listened, their expressions unchanged. "You should have been more careful," one of them said. "These things happen when you travel alone." "But he assaulted her," I cried. "He tried to force himself on her." The officers exchanged a glance. "Well, she shouldn't have been so easy," one of them muttered. Tears streamed down Claire's face. I felt a wave of despair wash over me. We left the police station defeated and broken. There was no justice for us here. We bought tickets for the first train out of Tanghua, leaving behind the horror of the past few days. The journey back was a blur of silent misery. We didn't speak for hours, each lost in our own thoughts. The incident in Tanghua left a deep scar on both of us. The carefree spirit of our trip was shattered, replaced by a lingering sense of fear and distrust. We learned a harsh lesson that night. Sometimes the world is not as safe as we like to believe, and sometimes the people who are supposed to protect you fail you miserably.
This is a true story which happened with one of our Broccoli Fam subscriber on his vacation. He was sleeping peacefully in his hostel bunk bed when suddenly one of the girl brought a homeless man into the hostel at night. Things went crazy afterwards.
The insistent hammering on the door jolted me awake. It was 3 a.m., and the only sound that should be disturbing the nocturnal peace of the shared dorm room in the Casa Sol hostel was the distant murmur of the Barcelona night. groaning, I rolled over, burying my head deeper into the pillow, willing the noise to cease. But it didn't. I sat up, rubbing the sleep from my eyes and peering through the gloom at my roommates. Maya, oblivious to the commotion, snored softly, her face half buried in a mountain of crumpled sheets. Chloe, however, was wide awake, her eyes wide with a mixture of fear and disbelief.
"What the hell is going on?"
she whispered, her voice trembling. I shrugged, equally bewildered. "I don't know." The hammering stopped abruptly, replaced by a muffled argument. A woman's voice raised in a furious tirade, interspersed with the slurred ramblings of a man. I slipped out of bed, heart pounding, and tiptoed towards the door. Peeking through the narrow window, I saw a scene that made my blood run cold. Standing in the hallway, swaying precariously, was Elena, her face flushed and contorted in a drunken rage. Beside her, slumped against the wall, was a man, his clothes tattered and filthy. He smelled of stale beer and something I couldn't quite place. Decay, perhaps. Elena was screaming at him, her words a torrent of unintelligible Spanish. The man, oblivious to her fury, seemed more interested in the discarded pizza box lying on the ground. He rummaged through it with his grimy fingers, pulling out a half-eaten slice and stuffing it into his mouth. Suddenly, the man lurched forward, his hand outstretched towards Elena. She stumbled back, shrieking, and collided with the doorframe. The man, seemingly unaware of her, continued his lurching progress down the hallway, muttering to himself. Elena, regaining her balance, stormed back into the dorm room, her eyes blazing with a manic energy.
"He's disgusting,"
she hissed, her voice barely a whisper.
"I picked him up from the street. He was begging for money, and I felt sorry for him. He said he was hungry, so I bought him dinner, and this is how he repays me?"
She slammed the door shut, the sound echoing through the small room. Maya stirred, groaning, but didn't wake up. Chloe, however, was staring at Elena with a mixture of horror and disbelief.
"Are you serious?" she asked, her voice trembling. "You brought a homeless man back to our dorm?"
Elena scoffed. "He's not homeless. He's just down on his luck. He lost his job, his family,
and he probably has every disease known to man,"
Chloe retorted.
"Elena, you can't just bring random strangers back here. This is a hostel, not a charity shelter."
Elena ignored her, pacing frantically around the room.
"He's harmless. He just needs a little help."
Just then, a loud banging sound erupted from the hallway. Elena froze, her eyes wide with fear.
"What was that?"
Chloe whispered, her voice barely audible. We all held our breath, listening intently. The banging continued, growing louder, more insistent.
"I think we should call the hostel staff," Chloe said, her voice trembling.
Elena hesitated, then nodded reluctantly. We called the front desk, explaining the situation as calmly as possible. The receptionist, a young woman with a bored expression, promised to send someone up immediately. A few minutes later, a burly man appeared at the door. He looked at the scene before him, Elena, her face pale and drawn, Chloe and I looking decidedly uneasy, and the faint stench of stale beer and something vaguely unpleasant hanging in the air, and raised an eyebrow.
"What in the name of all that is holy is going on here?"
he demanded. Elena, emboldened by the presence of the hostel staff, launched into a rambling explanation, her voice rising in indignation. The man listened patiently, occasionally shaking his head in disbelief. Finally, he turned to the door and knocked loudly.
"Señor," he called out in a booming voice, "please come out. This is a private dorm. You are not welcome here."
There was a long silence, then a muffled groan from the other side of the door. The hostel staff exchanged a nervous glance with us.
"I don't think he understands," he muttered.
He turned and knocked again, this time more forcefully.
Por favor, salga!
Suddenly, the door burst open. The man, his eyes bloodshot and glazed over, stood in the doorway, a broken beer bottle clutched in his hand. The sight of the shattered glass sent a wave of panic through us. The staff recoiled, his eyes wide with terror. Chloe screamed, and I instinctively ducked behind Elena. The man lunged forward, the broken bottle raised high. The staff, agile despite his size, sidestepped the attack, but the man lost his balance and stumbled backwards, crashing into the wall. The bottle slipped from his grasp, clattering to the floor. He groaned, clutching his hand, which was bleeding profusely.
Oh my God, Elena whispered, her face pale. I think he cut himself.
The staff, recovering from the shock, rushed forward and tried to disarm the injured man. But the man, fueled by a potent mix of alcohol and rage, lashed out, flailing wildly. He managed to land a glancing blow on the uniform, who stumbled back, cursing under his breath. The situation quickly escalated into a chaotic melee. The injured man, despite his injuries, was surprisingly strong and agile. He lunged at the staff, who fought back with a mixture of fear and surprising dexterity. Elena, overcome with fear, began to sob uncontrollably. Chloe, her face white, grabbed my arm, her grip so tight that it hurt.
"We need to call the police," she gasped.
I nodded, my fingers trembling as I dialed the emergency number. The police arrived within minutes. Two officers, their faces grim, pushing through the crowd that had gathered in the hallway. The injured man, sensing the arrival of the authorities, made a desperate attempt to flee. He scrambled to his feet, ignoring the blood that was pouring from his hand, and bolted down the hallway, disappearing into the labyrinthine corridors of the hostel. The police officers exchanged a look of concern. "He's a danger to himself and others," one of them muttered, his eyes following the man's retreating figure. The incident left a deep scar on our stay in Barcelona. The image of the man, his eyes wild with rage, the broken bottle glinting menacingly in the dim light, haunted my dreams for weeks to come.
This story is inspired from a true incident that happened 3 years back in Oklahoma. While two friends were on a fishing trip, one of the friends thought that the other one was trying to summon Bigfoot in order to put his life in danger. More about this after the story. My name's Kevin. My buddy Robert and I work for this indie production house that specializes in ultra-low budget horror movies. You've probably never seen any of our stuff because it's pretty trashy. We started out by doing editing work at some PA jobs, but we spent the last year trying to make it as writers and producers. For inspiration, we got a bunch of supposedly haunted locations around Georgia where we live. Neither of us believe in the supernatural, but it helps to visit those kinds of places to hear the stories from the idiots who actually do believe in that stuff. Most of the haunted sites were pretty similar. Lots of old plantations, basically, but then we went to this one old place just outside of Savannah that changed everything. It was supposed to be empty, but there was a squatter living there. He was an old, toothless guy, really creepy. He acted normal at first, showing us around the place and talking about all the noises he hears at night. Then he froze mid-sentence and full-on stared at Robert. His eyes got real wide and he said, "You're in danger. Red everywhere. Red. Red. Red." That's when we left. In the car, I tried to laugh off the whole thing, but Robert seemed really shaken. We drove back to the city. Robert didn't say a single thing the whole drive back. I knew I needed to snap him out of it, so I stopped in front of his favorite diner to treat him to lunch. As Robert was getting out of the truck, a car sped down the street. It would have plowed right into him hadn't I grabbed him by the collar and pulled him back at the last second. The car just kept going. Robert started to hyperventilate. He collapsed onto the sidewalk, barely able to breathe. I have asthma, so I gave him an inhaler to use. That seemed to work for a little bit. "Kevin, I almost died," he said. "The prediction, is it right? God, how did he know?" I didn't understand what he was talking about until he pointed at the car and how the car was red. "Dude, it's just a coincidence. I tried to lead him into the diner, but he wouldn't let me touch him. He got back into the truck and waited for me to drive him home. He kept babbling to himself like a crazy person. I thought that he would get over it, but when I talked to him the next day, he seemed even crazier than before. We have to go back, man. I have to talk to him now. He wouldn't listen to reason. I kept reminding him that paranormal stuff just doesn't exist. Car accidents happen all the time. No, I'm going back there, with or without you. He flailed his arms around, acting extremely unhinged. I'd never seen him like this before. We'd worked together dozens of times on indie films and ghosts with monsters and stuff, but we always laughed about how unbelievable it was. And now, he seemed as crazy as the homeless man. I couldn't leave him in this state, so I agreed to drive him back to the plantation. The man was no longer there. I figured it was a good thing, but Robert still wouldn't leave. He searched the entire house, trying to find anything he could. Eventually, he found a notebook hidden in the fireplace. It was filled with the homeless man's notes to himself. It was obviously the ravings of a crazy person. Everything was written in scratchy capital letters. Stuff like, "Bigfoot is real," and "Where is she?" over and over again. There were drawings, too. I told Robert to put it back, but he held the diary close to his chest and screamed, "Don't touch it! This is mine!" As we drove back to Savannah, he read through the diary. Even though it was nonsense, he thought he was reading predictions and warnings of the future. I dropped him off at his apartment, and I didn't hear from him for a couple days. He was supposed to meet me for lunch at the park that weekend, so we could figure out our next project, but he didn't show up. He stopped answering my calls. When I went to his place to ask what happened, he said that he couldn't leave the house today because the diary had said muggers at the park. This newfound paranoia was going to seriously mess with our lives. I had to help him, but no matter what I said, he just wouldn't listen. Then, a dark idea crossed my mind. If I could prove to him that the diary was gibberish, then maybe he would snap him out of it. The diary had mentioned Bigfoot a lot, so all I had to do was appear as Bigfoot and scare him. My buddy Daniel had a realistic-looking costume. I bet I could use that to scare Robert. So that night, Daniel and I snuck back into his building. I would have worn the costume myself, but Daniel insisted that he would do it. While we hid in the bushes, Daniel, in costume, stood outside Robert's window and growled, "Robert! Robert!" It didn't take long for Robert to appear at the door. Daniel screamed at the top of his lungs. Robert disappeared back into the house, and we couldn't see him anymore. Daniel walked back to me, disappointed he didn't have enough time to take off the mask and reveal the prank. He was about to give up, but I convinced him to go inside into Robert's building and finish what we started. Otherwise, Robert would probably be even more paranoid than before. I had a spare key with me, so I let Daniel in. I showed him where to go and then waited by the front door. Daniel was gone for a while. Everything was quiet. After hearing that sound, I ran into Robert's bedroom, where I saw Daniel lying on the ground. Robert stood over him, baseball bat in his hands. "I killed him! I killed Bigfoot!" I slowly approached him, my arms in the air so he wouldn't see me as a threat. Then I reached down towards Daniel and pulled off the mask. He was dead. Robert had killed him. But that's not... You're tricking me. He swung the baseball bat at me, but I overpowered him. I pulled it out of his hands and slowly explained that we were just trying to overcome his paranoia. The police came right after that. I guess one of the neighbors called the police. They arrested Robert and took him away. I had to go to the station too. I had to explain everything that happened. I feel awful that everything gotten out of hand, but Robert's now awaiting trial, and the only bright spot is that now, finally he realized that he was being delusional. This true incident happened in Ada, Oklahoma. A man at the age of 55 was convicted of first-degree murder for killing his friend during a fishing trip in July 2022. The man claimed he believed his friend was summoning Bigfoot to kill him. He'd testify that strange events occurred that day, including seeing a 12-foot Bigfoot and hearing his friend howl into a drainage pipe. Suspicious, the man thought that his friend planned to drown him and feed him to Bigfoot. The two got into a fight, and the man was strangled to death. Prosecutors proved that the man acted with malice aforethought, waiting until his friend turned blue to release the chokehold. This guy is now facing life in prison.
The warm, summer Montana breeze rushed through the car once we rolled the windows down, and our music escaped the tiny box. Derek, Gina, and I were on our way to a little lake in the middle of the woods, where Derek's grandparents had built a little cabin that we intended to use for the weekend. I'd never been to such a beautiful place, and the vibrant blue sky revealed exactly why they called it Big Sky Country. After driving for hours, we were almost there. As we passed the last gas station, and the last point of civilization for miles, I noticed a grisly man staring at our car as it drove by. Overalls covered with oil and soot, the man was filling up his old green truck, stacked full of tools, wood, and miscellaneous junk. We turned on the dirt road that led us to the cabin. It was a little dusty inside, but it had seen some use earlier that summer by Derek's cousins. It didn't take us long until we ran out to the dock and jumped into the crystal clear lake. We swam for a little bit before eating lunch in the sunshine. It was a great start to the vacation, as I'd never been to such a beautiful place. "I think that I'm going to lay down for a while," I said, as the sun and swimming was draining all the energy from me. "The spare bedroom has plenty of blankets, but shake everything out," Derek said. "It's been some time since anyone's used any of it." I climbed the little hill up to the cabin and found the spare room filled with blankets and pillows that all held that dusty cabin smell among them. After patting off a layer of rested sediment and swatting away a spider or two, I nestled onto the single bed and quickly succumbed to my exhaustion. When I awoke, a sticky sweat clung to every inch of my skin, and my head throbbed for water. Where I thought my energy would be replenished, it was only diminished more so. The golden hue of the early twilight hour streamed through the thin white curtains over the windows. The cabin was quiet, even after I opened the guest bedroom door and entered the living space. None of the lights were on in the cabin, and there were no signs of Derek or Gina, besides the bags they'd dropped by their doors earlier. I assumed they were still out by the lake or swimming, so I made my way down to the dock, only to find it void of my friends. "Hey, guys," I called out as an uneasy bubble began percolating from gut to throat. Only the cheerful chirps of the crickets responded. As I walked up the hill to the cabin, a loud snap came from the woods nearby. I froze in my tracks and waited for the source of the noise. I assumed it was a deer, but the back of my head told me that it had to have been something rather big to make such a noise. I hustled back to the cabin. "Guys?" I asked as I entered and closed the door behind me. When there was no response, I locked the deadbolt. I started to think that my friends were playing a prank on me when I found the note on the kitchen countertop. It was written by Gina and explained that they'd gone to the store to get some liquor. I set the note down and checked out the window in the direction of the snapping sound I'd heard. It was near impossible to see anything between the twisting shadows of the hulking trees. In the thick of the trees, it already appeared to be night, even though the sky still carried a heavenly glow. I took up one of the magazines that I brought along and sat on one of the couches, where I planned to wait until my friends returned. A small squeal escaped my lips, and I dropped the magazine as a horrid, raking noise came from the side of the cabin. Although I was hesitant, I peeked out the window. It was even darker now, to not find anything. As I searched the room for a light switch that would turn on a patio light, another scratch came from a different portion of the house. I found the switch for an outside light in the kitchen, where I conveniently grabbed one of the cooking knives. A slight tapping on one of the glasses,
turned into a loud crackling as the glass shattered. Suddenly, I thought about the man we'd seen when we drove past the convenience store. Had he followed us? What sort of things would he be capable of doing? I tried to think of what else it could be, but all I could imagine was that man breaking into the cabin and taking me with him. My mind raced and panicked as I rounded the corner with the knife point held high. Nothing but a few wisps of the fading dusk light streamed in the broken window. I checked over my shoulder, getting the sudden feeling that someone was standing with me in the room. I knew that if I stayed inside the box, that he would get me. The urge to flee filled my body as my flight mechanisms kicked in. Knife still in hand, I counted to three and took a deep breath before breaking from the front door. No one stood on the patio, so I sprinted down the roadway, praying that the intruder wasn't armed with a firearm. My soul utterly sank when a roar filled the air. The fantastical nightmares of a human invader suddenly melted away as I began cursing myself for leaving the house. A glance over my shoulder, and I could see the outline of the beast, a grizzly that stood nearly as tall as the cabin roof. My gut told me to run back to the house, but my head said there was no chance that I would make it. The bear didn't take long to follow me, so I darted into the thick of the trees. An ear-shattering snarl caused my spine to quiver. My whole body tremored, and I stopped running after the first bang. And after the second, I could hear the bear taking off in a different direction. "Lily!" Gina's voice called out. "Lily!" Derek's voice also filled the air. I came out of the trees to see Derek and Gina walking with the man who I assumed was the cause of the intrusion. I ran to them and embraced my friends in a hug. I looked at the man, who still wore his greasy overalls and held a shotgun that was pointed at the ground. He was watching in the direction where the bear ran off. "Y'all right?" he asked as he finally looked at me. I expected harsh, piercing eyes, but they were kind and gentle. "The bears around here always like easy food that people leave behind." "Thank you," I said. We stayed long enough to board up the window, then began driving home.